What's up, Packers fans? Aaron Nagler here, joined by Bill Schmidt of the Packers Radio Network. It's Carry the G Radio, the podcast. The Green Bay Packers are still a few weeks away from descending upon the city of Green Bay and starting up training camp. Bill, are you doing anything fun for the 4th of July weekend? Since you and I will not be discussing Packers next week, I got to know, where are you going to be? What are you going to be doing? What's going on?
As I think a lot of people in Wisconsin going to try to take up the Northwoods route. Nags, it's going to be an interesting situation.
How so?
Your boy's not a camper, per se.
I feel that.
This 300-pound body does not do well in camping, but we're going to be staying in a camper.
Ooh.
In the Minocqua-ish area. So the first time your boy's not in a... My version of roughing it is like a day's in. So this is going to be a little bit tougher. And I am going to be the one that is more concerned about, you know, showers and things like that. But it's going to be fun. So we're going to get out
of the day.
Just drink as much as possible.
Air-conditioned camper?
I believe so. Okay, I believe so.
That's a whole other world. That's camper. Not even close to roughing it. But okay, good. Good, good.
Yes. Roughing it for this cat that stayed one night in a tent, and then I believe I slept in the car the next night.
Oh, lovely!
And then left a group of my friends that we were. I was like, "I'm done with this.
Enough of this.
This is not happening anymore."
Oh man! Well, I'm going to be in Manhattan watching the fireworks with my girls. Awesome. Rented. I got a hotel room on the West Side because for the first time in like 10 years, usually the fireworks in New York traditionally have been on the East River. This year they're on the Hudson on the West Side. So I got us a hotel. Gonna walk the High Line there on the West Side and watch the fireworks. It's gonna be a lot of fun.
That's basically awesome.
Gonna unplug for a weekend, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Ain't gonna do nothing except probably watch soccer and hang out with my girls. So I'm excited about that.
So how are we partaking in the soccer right now? Has the soccer been good? Is it good soccer?
It's been great, dude. The soccer. Euros have been amazing. The Copa America is just kind of ramshackle because like during the day you watch the Euros, right? And then usually like in the past week or so it's been Copa America that has been going in the evenings. And that's, I got to tell you, the summer of soccer has been amazing. It's been
incredible. There we go.
It's been a lot of fun. The U.S. plays tonight. You should check them out. But Are we good or no? No, we're okay. We're okay. We'll hang, you know. We'll end up losing at some point down the stretch here during this tournament. But
we're gonna be able to battle and have a chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they've got talent. No question about it. But yeah, I'll tell you what, it's kind of retribution for the last World Cup being during the month of December, which is like just goes against the word of God. Like soccer tournaments are supposed to be in the summer. And I have now two of them right on top of each other is just like, I'm like gorging. It's so great.
The reason why as a beyond soccer casual,
right.
The best part of it being in the summer is the fact that there's sports on at odd times during the day.
Yeah.
That's
right.
That's when you can fully consume and take, I think, the most advantage of it. I think my first real baptism into soccer where I actually like watched a full game was the World Cup in South Africa.
There you go.
When people were really being welcomed to the Vuvuzela train. And that was the best part because it was all starting at 7 a.m. So I was watching sports, Price is Right, then go outside and play.
Then go and work.
It was a good deal.
I used to remember when I think the World Cup was in Japan and my buddy Luke and I were up at like 5 a.m. watching a U.S. match and we had to be quiet because his wife was asleep and she was a school teacher. And so she had to get up early, but not quite as early as the matches. So the U.S. would score.
Not as early as you drunks.
No, exactly. And so we would like the U.S. would score and we would have to be so quiet in our celebration. Like we were like, just looking at each other like it was so much fun. That was a good time.
That is one of my favorite things about watching sports when we just had the baby in our
I gotta be quiet with the baby
day after was divisional round Bills Bengals and Dad was gonna invest. All right, we just had a mouth to feed, right? So there were some moments where you're just, don't wake the baby, don't wake the baby, don't wake the baby, come on Joe, let's go Burrow. Luckily, Burrow buried the Bills, and then that helped us out there.
There you go.
Slippers were good for that first week.
I was just going to say, baby, got a new pair of shoes. So that's good. That's what we like to see. Oh man. Well, we're delaying the inevitable here because, you know, all that's left now, Billy, before training camp starts is to, like, you know, pick the low hanging fruit stuff, mm-hmm. like, you know, the Mount Rushmores of the world, or we're going to talk about today, which is training camp battles. You know, the training camp battles we're most looking forward to, and or who we think is going to prevail in said battles. And I wanted to start along the offensive line, since that is your bailiwick. And
smart man.
I think, you know, we've heard Matt LaFleur so many times throughout his tenure in Green Bay talk about the best five, right? And I maintain that if we're talking the best five, and now obviously Zach Tom's injury situation bears watching here, right? Because there's zero doubt he is one of the best five.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? He comes back to camp. Maybe they put him on the pup to start. I think that's entirely possible, but we'll see. You know, I know Matt had
it would be a Packers move,
a good chance that he'd be mm-hmm. available, but they're always going to be cautious, right? But I think if Zach Tom is ready to go, I think the top five is pretty easy to predict. And I know that feels weird when they've just used a first round pick on an offensive lineman. But to me, I think, and tell me if I'm off here or you disagree in some way, but to me, it's Walker getting that start at left tackle. Mm-hmm. I think obviously Jenkins, Myers, Sean Ryan, and Zach Tom. Now, there are going to be battles throughout training camp at left tackle, at right guard. But I don't see, again, unless Zach is, you know, out of the mix for a significant amount of time, I still think it's the five I just listed. And I almost feel like that's chalk at this point. Like, it would take a real mess up from either Walker or Ryan to kind of slip in this regard.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of reasons why I'm with you on the Ryan part, because I have said I think Monk's going to have take a real run.
He's going to take a run at it. No doubt.
I think he's going to have a real chance to win that job. Sean Ryan's going to have to show some improvement, I think, to the point where he will then beat him out. Like, he doesn't have to show a whole lot, but I think they do need to see a couple of things from Ryan to be able to validate them putting him in there, because they tried to all of last year. And did he look good at times? Yes, but there was a clean and clear reason why John Runyon continued to play, was because Sean Ryan didn't take it away. I do really like Monk, and I think that he's gonna potentially prevail, but it would take a little something for him to win that job. The Morgan piece beating out Walker, I think it just speaks to the value they got in Rasheed Walker in the seventh round. This is a dude that was a third or a fourth round projection by pretty much every metric, and a slow 40 time, I believe, at the pro day was one of the reasons. Some slight questions.
It's that draft kind of march, right, where mm-hmm. all of a sudden all of the tape is still there,
yeah,
but we've got to pick it apart, we pick around apart the numbers, and all of a sudden that value gets decreased in the eyes of these teams.
Yeah, and somehow him teabagging a guy after he just pancaked him became one of, like, the worst things that you could possibly do. Yep. Offensive linemen love that.
Yeah.
So I think the way he played at the end of the year, he proved so much more than Ryan did, where I think it's going to take more to beat out Walker, especially that spot, Nags. Like, that's
so important.
It's going to take a lot, I think, for them to say, yeah, we will throw the 26th overall pick in there and not blink an eye when we've watched this guy start 18 games for us. That's just a hard thing to completely forget about. So I think Walker would be a much more surprise for me if he's not in there. I think that right guard job is a little bit more open because there'll also be more contenders for it. Maybe at some point they do say, Jordan Morgan, you can have a chance to go win that job. I think they want to let him sit outside and kind of maturate out there.
As he should. I think he's a tackle. Like, and I know there's been a lot of talk about his ability or the projection that he could possibly kick inside. And I know they've run him there quite a bit in the offseason, but I'm with you. I think they think he's a tackle, right? And they have made a long-term investment there. Now, that said, I know there are going to be howls if he isn't starting from certain members mm-hmm. of the Packers fandom, right? Which, I mean, I totally get it. You spend a first-round pick, you want to see that guy out there right away. But if the history of the Green Bay Packers tells us anything, especially recent history, like, they have zero problem looking at that guy and saying, no, that's a long-term investment. And if the first part of that investment is you sitting and being our, you know, swing tackle, we got no problem with that. That would be my guess.
And seemingly their most successful first round picks of the last couple of years have gone through
exactly
that same deal, right? I mean, right. And I think Rashawn is the best,
this poster child for it.
The poster child for it. I mean, you bring in two high price guys at that position and then draft with the 12th pick that same position. It's because it's not a this year move. That can be a 25, 26, 27 move. And I also think part of the reason why they're obviously big cross trainers, right, Negs? They want everybody to be able to play all absolutely. Of them.
Especially this year. Like, it felt like from the reporting from the offseason, like, they've always done some of that, right? Mm-hmm. With almost all these guys, we know their kind of love of a certain type, the way they've done a lot with guys later in the draft who have been tackles, but have the athleticism they like, where they will kick them inside and play them at guard, etc. But it feels like, other than Josh Myers, pretty much every single offensive lineman has played almost every single position at some point during the offseason.
And especially early, and especially in the offseason, I think so much of it is learning the plays, right? Like, it is easier to know the full scope of the play when you line up at different spots and you run that same play from all different spots. Is it easy? No. It forces these guys intellectually to really stress, but you're going to be stressed a lot in 30 seconds to try to figure out every single move that you have to do. It's a good test for these guys, and I think that's one that you almost have to pass off the field with them before you get the full opportunity on the field. Like, Dave passed so much, especially talking to Kuhn about it, like, the on-the-field stuff was so amazing his first camp, where it's like, we can get his knowledge base there, and at some point it will, because the dude was a worker, right? Like, he cared that much about it.
Right.
Generally, though, they're going to want you to earn it, I think, more in the classroom before you do just onto the practice field.
Which makes sense. It's going to be fascinating to watch the kind of maturation of an offensive line, hopefully sooner rather than later, as far as a lot of the kind of young parts they have, trying to piece them together. But then you look kind of backwards into the offensive backfield. We know they obviously paid a premium price for Josh Jacobs, and he's going to get the ball early and often. I have little doubt, both in the running game and the passing game. But after that, I think a big, big question here is, clearly you brought back AJ Dillon because he knows your offense and he's on the deal they gave him, essentially pretty dirt cheap, right? So now you're looking at the rookie that they drafted in Marshawn Lloyd, in Emmanuel Wilson. I think most people have written Emmanuel Wilson off in the sense that, okay, it's going to be nigh impossible for him to make this squad.
Yeah.
And that may or may not be true, but I just keep going back to Lloyd looking good and athletic and everyone's excited, but he also put the ball on the ground, his literal first touch of the offseason, which was a knock on him in college. Mm-hmm. And if he has, you know, a fumble here or there in practice, a fumble here or there in preseason, it's not going to take long for him to see the sideline and not be able to get on the field and probably be maybe even a healthy scratch early in the season, because they won't be able to trust him.
Yeah, it is. The flash is awesome, but that is one thing. And I don't know if we've seen it as much with LaFleur as we did with McCarthy, but that was a deal breaker. The ball hits the turf and you instantly go back, right? Like, you're onto the sideline and you're going to have a hand to the chest for a little while. So I'm kind of with you on that. The A.J. Dillon, Marshawn Lloyd, because A.J. is going to be on the team, at least I believe, just from the special teams part of it, too. But that's going to be a factor as well, because they're all potentially going to be at different spots.
On teams.
Right. So, like, there's not just, hey, if you can be the best up back, you're going to have a leg up here, because one's going to play here, one's going to line up here, one's going to be returner. So that's going to be fascinating into that evaluation. And I do think we saw over the last couple of years, Bisacci has been more involved with at least saying, this dude is who we kind of need on teams. I wonder if that plays into it, but you're very right. He's going to get opportunities, but if the ball does hit the turf, which was the biggest knock on him in college, it was never his explosiveness. It was never his vision.
You can do everything. That's the thing. I love the tape and I love the player, but it's like, that's a real easy way to lose a camp battle. Mm-hmm. You know, you get out there, those first, especially that the pads first come on, your first NFL action, those dudes, they're not hitting yet even. They're just thumping. But you put it on the ground once or twice, you're going to find it real hard to get back out on the field, at least anytime soon. You know, I just, that's the one area where I could see that kind of playing out maybe a bit differently than people are expecting. the other thing people are going to be watching, of course, is the backup quarterback spot. You look at these young gunslingers they got behind Jordan Love. I mean, Sean Clifford had a rough go of it there at minicamp. There's no doubt about it. Threw a bunch of interceptions. I still love his kind of attitude and what he did last summer. But Pratt certainly seemed to look the part so far in the offseason. I cannot wait till we get some closer to game action stuff to look at these two in, because I think Clifford last summer, he was a real gamer. You know, he was a guy who took care of the ball fine, ran the offense well during practices. But once they started got into like family night and the preseason games, he really let it rip. Right. And that's kind of what solidified him as the backup. I can't wait to watch both him and Pratt operating in some of the more scrimmage type stuff just to see if that's still there. Like, I know Clifford's going to let it go. You know, he's not afraid to kind of like let it rip, so to speak. But, you know, Pratt, he's played some big time football.
Big time football.
I don't think it's going to be too much for him in any sense of the word.
No, the funny thing is Clifford obviously played at a bigger institution and played a lot of different competition.
Right.
When you talk about which one played, you know, more time. I think the Clifford piece that you're explaining is fascinating from the now he does have something to lose, right? Like,
exactly.
I don't have anything to lose. I'm going to come out here and sling it and see where
everybody thinks I was overdrafted. Screw you. I'm chucking it. Like, well, that was last year.
Now it's your job because there's only going to be two of them. So I think there's something to that of how does, if there's a different sense of pressure that he feels this camp. Totally. I like Pratt a lot more. Now it's not only because we just watched Pratt more pre-draft stuff, but the scrimmage stuff is awesome. The inside or the joint practices are going to be really fun with those battles. And they couldn't have brought in or had a couple of the better ones to be able to have with Denver and Baltimore, because that Baltimore one is going to stress you when they come up here.
Oh, no question. I mean, you talk about the top flight defense. I mean, I will say last year during the Patriots, like, battles, those were, or what was it, 2 years ago? Was that last year? 2 years
that
ago?
That was last year, and I thought the Patriots were going to win 7 games after watching them at that joint.
They looked so good on defense at Packers camp last year. So good. I mean, they just, you know, they had no quarterback and no offense, but yes, you're absolutely right about iron sharpening iron, right? Like, the fact that you get to go against some real quality defensive opponents, and you got to think, that probably plays into why Matt spoke with these teams and was interested in working with them, right? For that exact reason, getting some of that kind of good action. No doubt.
No doubt to it.
Then switching over to the defensive side of the ball, where are you, Bill Schmidt? How do you fall when you talk about the cornerback position? Because we all know they're counting on Jair returning to Jair form. Like, we're expecting all pro Jair, locking it down day in, day out, week in, week out. But then after that, I mean, anything could happen. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, Kalen King is like the phenom of camp and ends up winning the starting job. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but I won't be surprised if it does.
Yeah.
Could you legit be anybody out there? I wouldn't be surprised.
Because the last couple of years, the Ray Nitschke MVP has been a corner, right? Exactly, like, I mean, it's been in the secondary, and that guy that everybody has talked about, Valentine was the dude last year.
Made a bunch of plays, turned a bunch of heads. Yes.
I think the wild card in the whole thing, Nags, and maybe it's not that wild because he is a former first round pick. Stokes is going to have something to say about the run, and at least they gassed him up so much in the mini camp in the spring that I just think they're going to give him one last chance to take the job.
Right.
But what Valentine put on tape last year is going to be tough to just completely ignore. And I mean, he's been everywhere with the organization. I feel like I've seen him.
He's become a bit of a
he's somebody that they're putting out there for potentially some reason. There's gonna one of those guys I think separates themselves kind of early, but don't be surprised if all of a sudden we're out there the first or second day in pads and
right?
Why is Stokes lining up with the ones? Well, because they're going to give it one more chance with that, at least the stuff he had in year one and the draft capital. I still think that's a part of it for them, mm-hmm. but he won't have as long of a leash there at the top. But I kind of think they're going to give him a chance to go and steal it right away.
Yeah, I mean, I loved the aggressiveness from Valentine last year, the physicality of his game, but it was pretty damn inconsistent, right? There were certainly days where he looked really promising, and there were certainly rough moments where he got taken advantage of. And I think I don't think that's telling any tales out of school. I think that's pretty fair. Stokes, I don't remember a single real positive stretch from him. And I know he's coming off injury, re-injury, whatever. But man, you talk about a guy who really has to kind of turn back the clock and recapture whatever it was he was doing his first year, because that was where the promise really kind of reared its head.
Yeah, dude, you could see it his first year.
You saw it. Absolutely. And that was, after Jair was out for such a long stretch, he hadn't expected to play as much as he did, but he did, and teams went after him and he responded really well. But man, that all fell apart his second year. And obviously this long stretch with the injuries. But then when he was on the field last year, it wasn't good.
No,
it wasn't good.
Yeah. So and that's where maybe it is all lip service that all the gas has come throughout this mini camp period. But I just I feel like they're going to take one more swing there. And who knows? Maybe it's a really quick leash where it's, hey, you got to show us something in the first week. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to be fighting an uphill battle to be on this team.
And look, to be fair, there is something to be said for you're talking about the glowing reports, right? Well, a lot of it has been centered around he looks great and he feels great.
Looks great, feels great.
There's certainly something feeling to be said fast. For getting past the injuries, right? Mm-hmm. Like Rashawn Gary, I think this year is going to look very different getting past that ACL injury. For Stokes, he's getting past numerous injuries,
countless ones.
And so hopefully that it enables him to kind of recapture some of the form we saw his rookie year, because hell, if we can pair that guy with Jair Alexander, we're cooking with gas.
Now I'm
getting excited.
Yep.
Something that's not really a camp battle, but there will be battles kind of fought probably for Halfley to determine what kind of approach he wants to take as far as his sub packages go. It's weird because you can label it the safety battle, right? Opposite Xavier McKinney. We know they drafted three safeties. They have a leftover safety from last year's draft and Anthony Johnson Jr. I think all of those guys are going to be in the mix. But what's fascinating to me is that there's also some residual kind of effect for how that battle plays out and how much three safety stuff they play, which means then your nickel slot guy in Keyshawn Nixon is most likely relegated to the sideline. And or you're playing dime and you're keeping Nixon out there, but then you've got him in one slot and you got a safety in another slot, where I just think there's a chance that Evan Williams comes in and balls out. Right. And I think a lot of people right now are earmarking Javon Bullard as the guy opposite McKinney. But do the Packers have to find a way to get both of them on the field a lot more because they just look so good? And the way that Halfley is trying to attack defenses and take things away on a matchup basis week by week could determine we may say a lot of three safety one week and none of it the next week. But that's to me why the safety battle in this camp is going to be so fascinating, because I do think they got to find out what they have before they can even determine, okay, this is how we want to operate with our sub packages, because hell, they could all flame out, right? And then it's we need Keyshawn on the field as much as possible.
Serious problems.
Yeah. So I don't know. That to me is just fascinating for how many dominoes could fall depending on who rises and who falls.
Well, and I like how you said it of forcing himself on the field in an Evan Williams category, because I think it was Rob asked the question last year about Valentine when you just mentioned it, where it's at what point are you just going to have to find a way to get this guy on the field? Right. And I kind of think Matt was it's going to work itself out. Right? It always does.
They love saying that. Ted Thompson always used to say that. Yeah.
It's just going to work itself out. But it kind of will on just the matchup specific part, right? Probably. Were mentioning that there's going to be teams where they know that he's going to be a better matchup in the slot if they're going to see a lot of tight end split out. And so I think when you talk about Williams and King, who you had mentioned in the cornerback conversation, those two are the ones that could really play themselves into the equation the most.
Agreed.
You mentioned the battle of it. Bullard comes in as the clear incumbent, right?
The favorite, I would say.
Or the favorite. Or do you think Johnson comes in with just the...
I know they ran Johnson with the ones most of the offseason, right? But then they're right at the end, which makes sense. Totally makes sense. But then right at the end, they started mixing in Bullard and Williams with the ones. So I do think there's a chance they open camp with Johnson opposite McKinney just to keep doing that for continuity's sake and for seniority's sake, etc.
People are going to lose their minds.
They will. Twitter will melt down. That's fine. Yes. But I don't think it'll take long for Bullard to be getting the majority of the snaps across from McKinney with the ones. That's my guess right now. But that's why we go to camp and we watch these battles. That's why it's so fun.
Well, and again, I mean, I know it just sounds like a broken record, but one of those guys is probably going to have to put themselves in a clear spot. I guess if you'd also put Oladapo in there well.
He's such a wild card because he missed so much of the offseason.
You just don't know.
Injured most. Yeah. I mean, he wasn't out there, right? So he was one of my draft crushes. I absolutely love his game, but I don't know. Is he behind? Is he going to be like thrown into the fire even though he missed all this time? I don't know. I'm pulling for him. I love the kid, but I think he's a real kind of unknown at this point.
Well, and I don't know if maybe I'm just too early on it, but I've almost just thrown him into like strictly special teams.
It's entirely possible. Right,
like I've thought about it a few times where he hasn't even really factored into the defensive arithmetic for me. It's just then where are you slotting him on teams and how many plays can he make on all four? Because I imagine there's not going to be one that he's not a part of the unit.
Totally agree. I mean, I think even the style of his play,
suits really, really well.
The idea of get him out there on teams as much as possible. Hey, you're a young guy. That's how you make teams. That's how you make football teams, right? Like you have to be able to contribute there. So
totally,
especially if you've missed all this time with injury, coach, I'll do anything. I'll go. I'll hunt. I'll block. Whatever you need me to do, I'm all in. I think that probably will be his attitude. And now we got to talk about obviously the kicker. No, I'm not talking about kicker battles. Nope.
Greg Joseph's winning it. It's not going to be a competition.
See, you keep saying the Greg Joseph thing. Although it was funny because last time we recorded, I was like adamant that Carlson's going to win. You said Greg Joseph, and then they cut
the other dude.
So we were like clearly in sync with the Packers on this. Like we knew the other cat had no chance. But then they went and picked up this kid from the Lions. So
funniest thing is though, I see the press release and like I don't know if it's the same on your email for your app instantly. It cuts off right at the words of Packers release
that's
kicker.
That's so funny. Yes.
Like,
yes.
You gotta be shitting me, dude. I just fought Nags on this, said that Joseph's gonna make the team and they're gonna cut his ass an hour after.
Oh my god, that was so good. I thought the exact same thing. I was like, awesome. Oh, here it is. I win. And then it was like the one dude we both were like pretty sure wasn't going to be part of the equation. So that's good.
The one guy we thought was going to be shagging balls.
Yep.
During the picking battles. Yeah. Okay.
It's so funny to watch those guys like walk around during camp, isn't it? Like they're always off in the Hudson Center while everyone else is outside. And then they come out for like 10 minutes and do their kicking stuff. And then they go back in. And like you never see them other than when they're just kind of sauntering. I'll call it sauntering in and out of the Hudson Center.
Yeah, it's a slow stroll. It's also one of those where it's like, let's make sure that some people see us so they know that we're here still.
Right.
But don't draw too much attention to us when they make us do stuff.
Yeah, we don't want to be really involved with practice. Come on. We're
just trying to be over here, trying to be a good vibes guy. That's where the punters are always, because punters are a lot more fun, necessarily.
Yeah. Traditionally.
Too tied up and have to be professional.
Anxiety.
You're a kicker. It's all okay. The punter can have themselves a little bit more fun and bring some more life.
It's true. You know what that got me so jazzed for? Oh, my God, Billy. I can't wait for camp. I can't wait for camp.
It's going to be awesome, isn't
it? Can I tell you something? Like 2 summers ago, I was, you know how at like practice ends and the players kind of filter, like sometimes they have the young guy sessions, but like players filter out right up towards that exit where on top of the Hudson Center and they all go there, right? And then there's always some kind of things going on, people talking, whatever. And almost always after every practice, there is like the long snappers continuing to practice their snaps. And sometimes they have the protection dudes as well, but it's always like a few, whoever the long snappers are on the on the roster are practicing their snaps. And I'll never forget, I was just like standing there, just watching them. Like everything else is going, everyone's leaving, and I'm just watching the long snappers. And Brian Gutekunst comes by and goes, "Wow, you're fascinated by the long snapping, huh?" And I was like, "Brian," I was like, "Brian, let me tell you something. I just love being around it.
This is art.
I gotta be around it." It's like Rocky says it in the first film when he talks to Mickey about needing to be around the gym, even though like he's no longer fighting and he doesn't want to be seen. And Mickey's like, "Oh, these guys revere you," and like, and Rocky says, "I don't know how to explain it. I gotta be around it. I just love being around it, like it's, the football,
mm-hmm.
just being around it. It's so great." So I just linger at the practice field as long as I possibly can each and every practice.
Well, and especially in camp, because there's the freshness and newness to it.
Yes.
And it's the build, right? Like, cause you can kind of start seeing more of the friendships kind of bond. Right. Listen, that can be real schmaltzy and some people can laugh at it, but
I think it's important.
It's a lot of it. Yeah. You got to be able to see how these guys are going to fully interact with themselves, with everybody. And that's where it all starts. And there's the fun part of knowing that all these guys are bitching with each other, walking up like, "Oh my God, that was so brutal." Right. And then there's the guys that played 10 years ago. They're like, "This is the easiest camp I've ever seen."
So,
guys,
oh, so
30
good.
Years ago are like, "Oh my God, Forrest Gregg's rolling over if he's watching this practice." So that's one of my favorite parts of camp,
yep.
is immediately getting the gut reactions from all the other guys and the former players that are like, "Well, these camps are way easier. I'd have been able to play. I'd have been able to play, so much longer." But knowing that everybody was having the same conversations and walking out like, "This sucks, dude. This camp sucks, dude." And then by the back end of it, you're like, "You know what I do miss? Only thinking about football."
Yep. Nothing but.
And that's what it
is. All that matters in that moment. And that's why I love it. I love it so much. Speaking of walking out of camp, I hear you guys might be set up there. The old family area. The radio it from seems the like practice it might field. Be-
Yeah, it seems like there might be some better live reporting ability for camp Amazing. For us.
They're really not relegating you across the street at the rec center?
Yeah, Amazing. and where I'd like only be able to see a little bit of it. And then the one time I brought binoculars and Nags, somehow I saw fucking less. Like, I'm Amazing. With binoculars, and you could had no idea where
I
the ball was.
I just remember last year, you guys were so excited, and you were like, "We're broadcasting right from Ray Nitschke Field." And then, like, I saw, I don't know if it was you or Hunter or somebody had put out like a picture from your vantage point when yeah. you were broadcasting. And it was like the players looked like ants.
On, you thought on the we field. Were filming. Yeah.
And I was like, hard to see much, but no, it looks great. Like, I'm excited
it's
for
like
you
being
guys.
Around it, Nags.
I know. Hey, gotta I know. I know. You know,
best,
I know.
The best part about the Resch Center, and this is no bullshit,
right?
Is watching the fans.
Yes.
In the middle of practice, mm-hmm. knowing like when I was 11 or 12, there's a moment where I'm not leaving the seat because I need to watch every single
every
bit of
every single second.
But yep. then there was like the 8 to 11 range where it's like, okay, I'm going to be here. But now, Dad, let's go throw the football. And Dad's yep. like, "We drove 2 hours here to watch this. Like, I'm not going to get up." And then, so then Mom's walking over there. She's throwing the ball. Right. You randomly are playing like a game of 500 with like five or six kids that you just met.
You just met right there
and
in the stands.
And we get to watch all of it surrounding. And that was almost the best part. And then the people that are lingering, you want to talk about lingering, like 4 or 5 hours later. Because they just went to the pro shop, just took a tour.
It's the vibes, man. It's the vibes.
Soaking it all
camp
in.
Camp vibes. You cannot yes. beat it. You cannot beat it. And to your point, yeah, you're filled with hope. It's the start of something. It's like we haven't given up a point on defense.
Not
Nobody's false started on offense. Everything is gorgeous. Everything is huge and full of
there
hope.
There hasn't been a big 3rd and 14 against us that extends a drive. And you're
that
like,
we let the middle wide open. Yep. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all new. It's all full of hope. I can't.
I contend Green Bay in August better than Green Bay in December. Even though people will love the shots of the snow, that vibe in camp is pretty electric.
I don't know if I can agree with you on that one there, Billy, but I hear you. I hear you. It is magical.
See,
you know
you
what?
Like the cold. You're weird like
that.
Cold.
I fucking love the
See,
cold.
See, you're weird like that.
I am weird. It's true. I will say, though, you know, the one thing I do miss about, like, you talk about the old camps and the old camp practices and all that. And I, anybody who's listened to me for any amount of time knows where I'm going with this, is the night practices. Mm-hmm. Man, I miss a night practice at Ray Nitschke Field. Shit. You want to talk about magical? Holy shit. I remember, I'll never forget, there was under McCarthy, I think it was like 20, I can't believe it's 12 or something like that.
Everybody in
just, they had a nighttime practice. And I remember turning to, we were on the sideline, and then Bedard and I walked over to the stands and just stood there watching practice. And it was just, because it was like, it was half filled, you know?
Yep.
But it was still like, and it was just perfect. It was, you couldn't beat it, man. It was just, I don't know, it was hard to describe, but the vibe.
When the sun's going down, the breeze is hitting, and y'all are hearing pads clashing, and you know that it's the best competition period coming up the day. Yeah, it's a tough one to beat.
You can't beat it, man. You just can't beat it. And the lights come on, and oh, so good. And I can't wait. I can't wait. Night practices or no, I can't wait for camp.
So excited. Who do we have to talk to try to get Bisaccia, Sean Slocum, like, mic'd up for?
Now you're going old school. There we go. You get him yelling on the mic
one time. Oh my god, dude, so funny! Because all of a sudden you just hear the air horn, and you're like, "Whoa, that was a little louder than normal." All right, everybody, get on through it. Sweet. All right, special teams.
Man, or you know what? You talk about missing. I miss Slocum in the horn. Right. But I also miss like the random McCarthy F-bomb that you could hear like across the field. Like Matt I've seen Matt get after it once or twice, but he's pretty cognizant of, you know, the setup and there are families here and I'm trying to keep it real, whatever. Yep. But man, there was a time when I think somebody, Balaga maybe, somebody false started. And I mean, clear as a bell, you heard Mike McCarthy MF the hell out of him. Like, and they were like, this was full stands, right? Awesome. Like kids everywhere. And I was like, God, that's beautiful. That's perfect.
There's still not a much better memory that I have of training camp for the Packers than the night practice when McCarthy brings everybody in after the three or four fights.
Yep.
And Laga gets into it and it's his rookie year.
Yep. And he gets after them.
And we're sitting in the top row on like the 20-yard line, and you heard every word of that just rant fest. I looked over at my dad, and he goes, I'm glad we came. He's like, that was worth the day of vacation. Oh, you better believe it.
That's so good. I cannot wait. I'm so excited for training camp. I'm so excited to keep talking ball with you, Billy, throughout the entirety of the season. Damn, we'll be back with Carry the G Radio every Tuesday afternoon. In the meantime, it's Carry the G Radio, the podcast, but we will be back on the airwaves this year. I'm excited, Billy. I can't wait.
It's going to be awesome, dude. Enjoy the holiday. Enjoy the family time, because that seems like it's going to be an awesome one. And I'll be honest with you, 4th of July, the best holiday outside of Christmas.
Yeah, I was going to say, Christmas is my favorite, but I love 4th of July just
again,
because
I get to relax. Again, you with the cold weather, though.
I love Christmas. Come on. How can you not
you
love
with
Christmas?
The cold weather. You with the cold weather. Just like getting to yell weather. America and drink a beer at like 8 in the morning. That's why the 4th of July is difficult to beat.
I mean, this is America, sir. You can do that any day you want.
That's fair. We call
it's
that
land of the free. It's the land of the, we call that Tuesday. Hello. All right, Billy. I really appreciate you. Like I said, we won't be dropping a new one next week, but we will be back in 2 weeks. Enjoy your holiday, everybody. Billy, thank you so much, man.
All right, man. Be safe. We'll talk soon.